Hello to all of our listeners. I'm Skylar Ashley. We're here with a very special guest, Dr. Andre Bachman of MSU's College of Human Medicine's Department of Pediatrics and Human Development. Dr. Bachman is making headlines with his work on the childhood cancer strain, neuroblastoma. Hello, Dr. Bachman.
Hi, Skylar. How are you?
Just tell our listeners about your work and what it is you're doing.
I've come to MSU in 2015, but I have worked on this pediatric cancer called neuroblastoma since 2001 at my former institution. We have, since 2001, primarily focused our research in my research lab on this pediatric cancer, neuroblastoma. Neuroblastoma is not a pediatric cancer as people think of in brain tumor, but actually a nervous tissue tumor and can spread to the brain in some cases. And our goal in our research is to find novel biological drugs that synergistically, in combination, target the tumor and eradicate the tumor faster than what the current medicines can do.
Now, your work revolves around the combination of old drugs, is that correct?
Some of our work evolves around repurposing or repositioning old drugs, that's correct. We have other projects where we also identify new drugs that have not, or new compounds that we hope to become drugs one day. But the one that made most headlines is a repurposed drug that has previously been used to treat African sleeping sickness and FDA approved to do so. And we found in 2001 that this drug might be also useful against this pediatric cancer, neuroblastoma.
Where does your team get the idea to repurpose old drugs?
One of the main problems in pediatric cancer is that pharmaceutical companies often do not have enough incentive to develop a pediatric cancer-specific drug for many reasons. One is that, fortunately, there are only very few children that do get cancer compared to adults. But of course, there are still a good number of cancer patients in the United States that are kids. And for neuroblastoma, that's about 700 children a year in the United States. And so that is not a large market for a pharmaceutical company, so they do simply not have an interest typically to develop a drug for such a small population. And repurposing an old drug is, in our opinion, a very good approach because it's a drug that is already on the market for something else. It has been approved. It is safe as far as one knows, and a lot of the studies have already been done that with a new drug would have to be done. And so the costs that are involved in developing a new drug are skyrocketing high. They cost up to $300-400 million. To get a drug into phase 1, 2, and phase 3 clinical trials is very expensive, and it takes a lot of time. So two reasons, really, to save money and to save time, because the children do not have time. They want to, especially the parents, they are seeking new drugs sooner than later. For understandable reasons, repurposing an old drug will hopefully help in achieving that goal to find a new drug for this particular indication sooner and for less money.
If your work isn't entirely profitable for a pharmaceutical company, as you mentioned, because it affects a low number of people, what kind of impact does that have on the work of a research team such as yours?
To me, as a university professor, it doesn't necessarily matter whether I develop a blockbuster drug that reaches millions of people or whether I work on a disease that is rare, because I'm a university professor and here to do academic research. For pharmaceutical companies, there's a different purpose and goal. They are here to develop drugs that will eventually create revenue, right? And we have the freedom, I guess, at the universities, and that's what I enjoy being a professor, to work on projects that may not be the most profitable ones, but to me, ethically most interesting ones to work on. I certainly enjoy working on a type of cancer that helps children, and that's always been my greatest goal, to help that population of patients.
Childhood cancer is obviously an extremely emotional subject. It affected the campus here at Michigan State University a few years ago with Princess Lacey, who was a patient of neuroblastoma, the strain that you're working on. Does any of this come into play when you're working? Do you think of, you know, the sort of emotional aspect, and does that affect your research at all?
Absolutely. In fact, that's why I started the research, for that very reason you just said. It's a very good point. To me, my first interaction with a patient, or better, with the parents of a patient, was in 2001 again. And I should maybe mention, I'm not a physician, I'm a PhD research scientist who has the fortune to work with very skilled clinicians and physicians. And I've been around many physicians during the years working towards the drug development for these cancer patients. As such, as a researcher, I have really not had back then any interaction with patients. And I remember a very specific event at a conference in Paris in 2002, when I encountered my first interaction with parents that had children with neuroblastoma through a dinner in all places. And it was probably my most sobering dinner experience in my life, realizing what a horrible disease this really is and how affected these parents obviously are. I'm a parent of three children myself, and you know, you cannot help but think of these things in from an emotional point of view. At the same time, you have to obviously be systematic and rigorous about your research and decide whether or not what you're doing is really making sense. But it has a huge impact on my lab, how I run my lab, and what I teach my students in the lab, and also postdoctoral fellows. Even though we do mostly basic science research in the lab with some translational components, I want them to every day remember why they're doing what they're doing. So when they look at cancer cells through a microscope, I don't want them to forget that behind that cancer cell was a tumor at some point that killed the child. And as long as they keep the endpoint in their mind, endpoint being trying to increase the benefits of drug treatments for these children with this fatal cancer, as long as they always think about the patient in the end, I'm happy with them. And as long as they work hard towards that goal, that's what we try to achieve in my lab.
I believe there's a lot of misconceptions, especially when articles such as the one about you in the Lancet State Journal get published. The word cure gets used a lot. And sometimes I believe when people read that, they think that it's right around the corner. It's just a year's worth of time to where there's a mass-produced drug that's just going to eliminate whatever strain of cancer it is. Could you talk a little bit about the actual process of a drug being ready for mass production and consumption?
So that is a very dangerous answer to give always when people ask for how long is it going to take. It is understandable why these, especially parents, want to know why the drugs are not available sooner. Research in the lab just takes a long time. And again, going back to the repurposing of old drugs, this is why we think that going back and looking at old drugs that are already available, we can speed up that process. It doesn't mean it's going to be a cure in 1 year from now, unfortunately, because we still have to do rigorous research to prove that for this new indication, the drug still works. But we are still saving a lot of time, plus a lot of money by using some older drugs that are out there and available. There's many examples, not just the drug we work with. There are, for example, thalidomide, which was a horrible morning sickness drug that created all kinds of abnormalities in babies back in the 60s or 50s. Today is used as a successful multiple myeloma drug. So repurposing these drugs have shown increased benefits. Are we going to eradicate cancer with one single drug? Well, nobody knows, but I would guess or argue probably not. First of all, there's probably about 200 different cancers, and each one is almost its own disease. And so we cannot look at cancer just as one word and as one cure, for sure. But even within the individual cancer types, like breast cancer or lung cancer, and in my case now neuroblastoma, we also work on multiple myeloma, by the way. Those will have a separate type of drugs that will hopefully work one day. I also think there's never going to be one single drug. We will definitely have to have combinations of drugs. And the big question is which combination is going to be the most successful one, which can achieve synergism so we can kill the tumor cells as rapidly as we can and also at the same time leave the normal cells alone, because we do not want to have the heavy side effects which currently are often the case with chemotherapy.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your time, Mr. Bachman. And is there anything else you'd like to add to our listeners?
Well, I very much appreciate the support that I've received from MSU. I've been here for 2 years, and it's been an exciting 2 years. There's a lot of things happening, and I'm very proud to be a faculty of the College of Human Medicine. They've supported me in what we do. And if anybody has any interest in neuroblastoma research, or if there are any students out there that would like to know what we're doing in our lab, they can give me a call, contact me, probably through you, if so desired, if they like that. So we're happy to talk to anybody who's interested in our research.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.